The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Hello, and welcome to Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm here with Guy Jofredi to talk about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. This is episode 71, and we're recording on Thursday, November 13th at 9 o'clock in the evening. In today's deal episode, we also get to announce a new sponsor, a partner that fits this Burn Rate episode perfectly. Ari Ventures, the business angel club that connects Swiss startups with investors from Bern and the Espace Mittelland region. Guy, you're the one responsible for this partnership. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yes, of course, very happily. I'm also a co-founder and longtime board member at Ari Ventures. With Ari Ventures, we built a platform where startups and investors meet at our events with the goal, naturally, of enabling investments. We founded Ari Ventures in 2019, and since then, it has been a big success for the region. At 26 events, more than 250 startups have pitched to our investor community, and more than 20 million have been invested into 80 startups. Those numbers are quite remarkable. It's more than many VC funds in Switzerland invested in that same period. And with the partnership with Burn Rate, Ari Ventures aims to increase its reach in the ecosystem so the quality of startups stays high and also to make new investors aware of what Ari Ventures actually is. Finally, we want to highlight some success stories from Ari Ventures. For that, we'll also create a mini-series similar to what you know from the Upscaler program. Personally, I'm very excited about this partnership and that we can now support Ari Ventures even better here on Burn Rate. More information can be found at www.ariventures.ch, and you can also follow the association on LinkedIn to stay up to date.
Perfect. Great job. I'm really happy Ari Ventures is on board. And as expected, this podcast is supported by Ari Ventures. Today, we're bringing you our November Deal of the Month episode with the most important deals from October. So what do we have on the agenda today?
As always, in our Deal of the Month episodes, we start with a Burn Rate market snapshot, a short review of the facts and figures in the Swiss and European startup ecosystem from the last month, and then the pièce de résistance of today's episode, the deep dives into Nexthink and its $3 billion exit from an EPFL spin-off, Deep Judge with its 40 million Series A round, also from ETH. And finally, we go back to EPFL for the 24 million Series A of Corintis. For each of these, we take a close look at how the companies developed, what their financing histories look like, and who the involved investors or buyers are.
Yep, and of course, there were many other transactions in October that we would have loved to include and discuss. But if we covered all of them, we'd still be recording tomorrow morning. We always try to keep a good mix of topics and stages. If any of you want to hear more about a specific transaction, feel free to send it to us as a listener question. All right, let's jump into the monthly recap.
In October, the last quarter of the year kicked off. That means it's now the end of year sprint. The total investment volume reached 230 million and we recorded 25 investment rounds. The large pipe deals, private investments in public companies, and the financing round of Energy Vault, which has been publicly traded for some time, were not included here. Otherwise, the numbers would be much higher. Compared to September, there were 9 fewer financing rounds in October, but only around 20 million less in invested volume. The biggest deals were the 105 million equity round of Eco Robotics, the 51 million round of Ormo Medical, and the 25 million growth round of Spineart. Taylor secured a 150 million credit facility Mass Challenge, Venture Kick, and Deep Tech programs, distributed a number of grants and awards. We recorded 11 exits, one fewer than in September, and again, for most deals, no financials were disclosed. Only for the unicorn exit of Nexthink to Vista was the purchase price communicated, as well as Andriems, which was sold for 16 million euros. What else is worth mentioning? With Koyo, we were invited to give a keynote speech on venture capital, motivation, mindset, methodology, and to join a panel discussion with experienced business angels at a joint event from Bank Rothschild and the Start Angels Network that was extremely interesting. And then we were invited to Rotary Clubs to present on the Swiss venture ecosystem and its potential. October really showed once again that interest in Swiss venture is clearly increasing among both companies and investors.
Yes, exactly. And I heard you did a fantastic job with those talks and represented me well. I was in Abu Dhabi and Dubai last week for investor meetings. And yes, we must not forget something. We completed the first closing of our Koyo fund and are super happy that we can finally start the investment period. We currently have 15 companies we're looking at more closely, and we hope to announce the first deal very soon.
Exciting. And
let's get back to the market snapshot and compare the October numbers in Europe with last year. Looking at my deal sheet, I see that Swiss startups raised 250 million in October last year across 16 rounds, and now we're placing the Swiss development into the broader European context. European tech startups raised about 8.3 billion euros in 342 deals in October. Is that a lot? Is it little? Compared to September, the numbers were slightly softer. We see a decline of about 1.2% in volume and about 6.8% in the number of deals health tech dominated October with 1.7 billion, followed by fintech and software. These three sectors together accounted for about 45% of monthly volume. Despite the slight month-over-month decline, October was still at a high year-over-year level, clearly above the previous year. In summary, October 25 in Europe was solid, with strong year-over-year performance and only a slight monthly slowdown. The market remains very selective, focusing on larger rounds, which aligns with Q3 trends where large financings remain strong while total deal count dropped.
This episode is presented by R Ventures, the Bern-based business angel club. R Ventures connects ambitious Swiss startups with experienced investors who provide more than just capital, a strong network, real expertise, and hands-on support for the crucial early steps. If you're a startup looking to grow or an investor seeking access to the most exciting early stage deals, apply now for our next event at www.rventures.ch.
All right, let's jump into the deal. Next Hink. The company is being sold for $3 billion. The acquisition is led by Vista Equity Partners. Hardly any Swiss startup has shown such a long and consistent scaling curve as Next Hink. But let's start at the beginning. Where does the company actually come from?
Next Hink is essentially an EPFL spin-off. It was founded in 2004 by Pedro Bados and his co-founders. They all came from the distributed systems group at EPFL. Back then, it was far less about employee experience. The term didn't even exist yet. The focus was on understanding what is happening on end-user devices in large enterprises in real time. So, Max, what exactly does Next Hink do?
The company essentially has two secret sauces. The first is they see more than anyone else, or so they say. Most IT tools only look at systems at a high level. Next Hink goes much deeper. They install software on every laptop and every device of their customers, acting like small sensors that constantly measure how the device is doing. That means, for example, how fast Teams launches, whether Wi-Fi drops, whether the CPU is overloaded, whether a driver is lagging, and so on. This happens in real time, and then they correlate all this information immediately. So they don't just know that Teams is stuttering, they know that Teams is stuttering because the access point on the third floor is overloaded, but only on this device type, after the latest Windows update, and so on. Very precise. Next Hink gets to the root cause instead of just treating symptoms. And that is incredibly valuable for IT departments because they can operate far more efficiently.
And the second secret sauce is crucial. Next Hink doesn't look at IT from a technical perspective, but from the perspective of the employee. The key question isn't, is the system online? But can the employee actually work properly right now? That's a massive difference. Here's an example. A system can be completely green, yet an employee spends 5 minutes waiting for Outlook to start because of a tiny configuration issue. Classic monitoring doesn't see that. Next Hink does, and it can fix it automatically. They have so-called playbooks, small repair scripts, that get executed immediately. Reset Wi-Fi settings, fix DNS, refresh drivers, and so on. And they can do this across thousands of devices at once without anyone needing to file a ticket. It makes IT proactive instead of reactive.
Exactly. And this combination is absolutely decisive. Only this approach creates a true picture of how well a company works digitally. That's why Nexthink is not just another monitoring tool, it is one of the companies that shaped the entire digital employee experience category over the last years.
Yes, exactly. They are deeply integrated into the software stack on end-user devices and deliver real experience data rather than just technical parameters. Another point worth mentioning is the recognition they received from Gartner. They positioned themselves extremely well in the Gartner ecosystem over the last years. In 2025, they were ranked number one in all five Gartner critical capabilities use cases. We're talking about globally leading enterprise benchmarks, and Nexthink is at the very top. According to Vincent Bieri, one of the co-founders, this category leadership actively contributed to Vista applying a higher valuation multiple than they usually would. So being a category leader clearly pays off.
Right. Let's dive a bit deeper. Let's talk about customers and revenue. The company was founded back in 2004. Where were you in 2004? Were you even born?
Well, barely. I was in Oxford. Also a good time?
Exactly. So, founded in 2004, and already by 2011, they had sold 1 million licenses to more than 200 enterprise customers. They were one of the first Swiss B2B software teams to internationalize consistently and at scale.
And we're talking about global enterprises as Nexthink's target customers. Today, their software is used by banks, insurers, industrial companies, retailers, and pharma giants. By 2019, they were already above 100 million in sales and reported 80% revenue growth at the time.
And today we estimate they have between 1,100 and 1,500 customers worldwide. Nexthink is a known name in virtually every global CIO agenda. It's a major board-level topic: hybrid work, remote work, cloud migration, and so on. Companies want to know how well their digital workplace really works. Nexthink is one of the few tools that can deliver this company-wide in real time with automation.
Based on public information, the company is now generating more than 350 million in revenue. It is said to be highly profitable and installed on more than 25 million end-user devices. That's an impressive number. With the new capital coming in alongside the acquisition, they want to scale beyond 1 billion in revenue in the coming years.
Let's talk briefly about the buyer. Who is Vista Equity Partners?
Vista Equity Partners, or Vista, is one of the world's leading private equity investors focused exclusively on software. They essentially do one thing: scale enterprise software companies, and they've been doing so for over 20 years with more than $100 billion under management. They have a highly operational approach, almost like a modular toolkit, to make software companies scale faster and more profitably.
Yes, exactly. Vista only invests in true category leaders. Well-known examples include Marketo, Ping, Qvent, and Datto, massive multi-billion dollar transactions. When Vista shows up, it's a clear quality signal. They don't buy to experiment. They buy to scale companies to a billion in revenue and beyond. And that tells you everything you need to know about Nexthink.
And Vista has a very clear playbook: improve pricing models, professionalize enterprise sales, modularize the product, scale customer success, execute add-on roll-ups, and systematically increase profitability. It's a very clear holding strategy. They buy software companies, transform them operationally within 3 to 5 years, and then sell them again, either through an IPO or to a strategic buyer.
Exactly. Marketo, for example, they sold to Adobe after 2 years. Datto, they sold to Kaseya after 5 years. Ping went to Thoma Bravo after 6 years. And Qvent after 7 years to Blackstone. You can definitely say this is a very disciplined and operational PE approach. I've been following the firm for quite a while, and they typically aim for a 3 to 5x return on their investments.
So, coming back to Nexthink, we tried to reconstruct the cap table. It was not easy for a more than 20-year-old company with so many rounds. Let's just highlight the key points. The numbers should be taken with a bit of caution, given the nature of this transaction. The seed round was led by VY Partners, $1.3 million in April 2006, 2 years after the company was founded. And if the shares acquired in this transaction came only from investors, Then the valuation at the time was just around 4 million post money.
Then came a corporate round at the end of January 2007, not even a year later. The round volume was $3.3 million, led by Auriga Partners. The valuation increased only slightly to around 7 million post. 3 years later came the Series A, around $5 million, again led by Auriga Partners. That's when the valuation jumped to almost 50 million post money.
A nice jump. Then the next financing round came 4 years later, in June 2014, just under $21 million, again with Auriga Partners leading. That round was followed by the Series B in April 2016, $49 million, led by Highland Europe with four co-investors. That's when another major jump happened, and at that time, people were already talking about an IPO. The valuation after that round was above $150 million, and remember, this was still 2016, before the big European startup hype.
Then came the Series C in December 2018, over $85 million, led by Index Ventures with several co-investors. According to our cap table, the valuation was already close to $600 million. That was followed by the Series D in February 21, so now we're getting close to the present, with $150 million. Permira, the well-known PE investor, was leading that round. And this was the first time valuation numbers were officially published, $1.1 billion post-money.
17 years to unicorn status with a first-class cap table, Highland Europe Index. Forstay also came in during an earlier round. Permira, Auriga, Six Partners, and many more VCs. Over the years, the company raised more than $300 million.
And now Vista bought out several investors at a $3 billion valuation and will become the new majority owner, so a full change of control. The exact ownership structure has not been disclosed. We're still researching, we have some early indicators, but nothing confirmed yet. Vista takes control. That's clear. Permira is partially exiting. We assume Index, Highland and Forstay have also sold parts of their positions.
Looking at the cap table, it really seems to be a fantastic exit for the founders and frankly for all investors. Of course, as always, we don't have insight into the shareholder agreements or the exact waterfall. But for investors of the last round, Permira, it's close to a 3x in only a few years. And if you look back at the 2006 round when V invested, that would be roughly a 70x for those early investors.
Wow. Did you account for the dilution properly in the cap table?
Yes. Based on the numbers we managed to gather, that adjustment is reflected correctly.
Wow, that would be an incredible fund returner for VI Partners. But of course, it's possible they sold part of their position earlier in a secondary we don't know. The lifetime of the fund they invested from ended at least 10 years ago. So it would be interesting to know. Maybe we'll get a comment from VI Partners. In any case, congrats on this fantastic investment. So what happens now with the company and the team?
The CEO, Pedro Bardos, is staying on board. Very important. Vista loves strong founder teams. At the same time, Vista clearly wants to drive the next steps. AI-powered automation, agentic tasks, further US expansion, and then portfolio add-ons to round out the platform.
Yes, and it's interesting because it shows once again that the traditional 10-year fund model doesn't necessarily work. I mean, if you sell only after such a long period, this has been a topic for over a decade already. Now, with the market developments, Nexthink accelerated massively, which finally sparked interest from PE. But it raises the question, what do you do with an asset like this 10 years in? If you're VI Partners, what do you do? If you have an evergreen structure, fine. If not, you need to sell parts of the position, maybe structure an SPV and move the asset into it. But if you have many such cases in your portfolio, it becomes a real headache. Not because the company is bankrupt, it's a strong operating company with plenty of customers, but ownership and fund horizons don't always align. And I understand why firms like Andreessen Horowitz, Sequoia, or Lakestar are questioning whether the classic fund model is still the right one. This whole situation also fits Nexthink's acquisition program, which they started in 2024. Back then, they acquired AppLearn. And with this new capital, you can expect more M&A in areas like digital adoption, end-user automation, and so on.
Yes, I agree. They will definitely add several companies. Next Hink will now be pushed hard to become the global category leader. For Switzerland, it's a huge signal, an EPFL spin-off being scaled into a global DEX champion and delivering one of Europe's strongest exits in 2025.
Very nice. Maybe we'll even see an IPO. Who knows? I'm curious what Vista will do with the case. Let's move on to the next transaction of the month. Deep Judge. Many of you know them. They raised $41.2 million in their Series A. That's a massive statement. I spoke briefly with Paulina this week. So, G, let's start from the beginning. Where does the team come from?
Deep Judge is a real Zurich story. It was founded in 2021 by Paulina Grnarova, Yannick Kilcher, who, besides being a founder, is also a very well-known AI influencer with an extremely popular YouTube channel. You should definitely check it out. And Kevin Roth as the third founder. All three came out of ETH and the Google research environment. They always focused on one topic: information retrieval, so precise, context-aware search, not just generative interfaces. And you can feel that in the product today.
And Paulina was recently named Young Entrepreneur of the Year. That shows how strongly the Swiss ecosystem perceives her. They also received early support through Venture Kick and several ETH programs, a classic deep tech path. But what really stands out, and you notice it whenever you talk to the team, from day one, they had a very international ambition.
Yes, absolutely. And what I also really like is that they had real pilot customers very early on, long before entering the funding machinery. That's very ETH typical. Build the product maturity first before doing big marketing.
Before we go deeper, let's zoom out. Why is search such a critical lever in legal tech? A lot of people massively underestimate that.
Because traditional search tools simply don't work for law firms. Keyword search finds words, but not context. Legal documents require an understanding of what, who, and why what is written, who is involved, and why is this document relevant for the current case.
And the documents themselves are extremely complex. Versions, long attachments, side letters, email chains. Without semantic search, you find nothing. And generative AI only works if the retrieval foundation is solid.
Exactly. And what's also interesting is how DeepJudge scales inside law firms. They usually start in one practice group, deliver massive value, and then expand across teams. It becomes an organic seed expansion inside the client.
And once a tool improves daily workflows, cross-sell happens automatically. First search, then agents, then integration into DMS or billing systems. And a crucial point is the market itself. Legal is highly regulated and extremely cautious, especially around client confidentiality.
Exactly, and that's what DeepJudge is built for. They developed a permission-sensitive system that respects ethical walls. They give full data ownership to the firm. They can run cloud, hybrid, or fully on-prem. And the last one, on-prem, is something almost no legal AI vendor offers. This is possible, as Thomas Dubendorfer told me today, because DeepJudge doesn't rely solely on expensive GPUs in data centers. They can run a lot on CPUs, even on local hardware. That massively reduces adoption barriers for big law firms.
For those who don't know Thomas, Thomas Dubendorfer is a well-known angel investor, angel of the year at one point. He invested in DeepJudge and acts as a board observer. Let's talk about the product. Many people think legal AI is just slapping a chatbot on top, but that couldn't be further from the truth at DeepJudge.
Yes, they're a retrieval-first model. That means they first build a precise, permission-sensitive search across all knowledge sources of the firm. DMS, SharePoint, case files, emails, billing, and so on. Only then comes the generative layer. Everything is based on real, correctly surfaced content, not hallucinations or random hit lists.
On top of that sit the AI agents, workflows that combine research, fact extraction, and drafting, always with proper permissions. And data security is one of their biggest USPs. The data stays inside the firm. No external index, no black box. DeepJudge is not a legal front end, but a deeply integrated retrieval and workflow layer for law firms.
Exactly. And because search, security, and workflow orchestration come together, you get a product that works in an extremely cautious industry.
Let's look quickly at the customers. The list now reads like the Champions League of the legal world.
Yes, absolutely. Major names like Freshfields, Holland & Knight, Cozen O'Connor, Arendt Fox Schiff, and Schulte, Roth and Zabel are on board. In Switzerland, they work with Homburger, Lenz and Steyr-Hellin, Wenger and Vieli and CMS. And just recently, they signed a global distribution partnership with Thomson Reuters that gives them immediate access to the global market.
That's top tier in Europe and in the US. And that's crucial. The legal market is ultra fragmented, but the premium firms set the standard. If you're in those firms, you've established a true category entry point.
And in terms of revenue, they're keeping a low profile, but we know they're now solidly in the seven-figure range and grew more than 500% last year.
500% is wild. That's serious acceleration.
It's a beautiful number, yes. Combined with the quality of their logos, you can imagine that a lot of money is now flowing, especially with those enterprise licenses at the world's top law firms. Those are small tickets for the firms, but huge revenue contributions for DeepJudge.
To put 500% into perspective, this week I saw an interesting pitch deck for Koyo. They also had 300+% growth, but driven almost entirely by one customer. The number alone sounds huge, but the number of customers matters just as much. You need both to understand the real trajectory. Still, the growth is undeniably strong. Anyway, let's move to the financing history. As always, we modeled a cap table for you. The company was founded in early 2021, and at the end of the same year, they raised their first round, 1 million Swiss francs at a 6 million pre-money valuation. Prominent angels participated: Thomas Dubendorfer, Felix Ehrat, the well-known attorney, and Daniel Sauter. Alongside the equity round, InnoBooster, VentureKick, and InnoSuisse supported the company.
And last summer, June 24, they raised the seed round. That was already a big one. Kotu came in with a 9.5 million franc round. 2 million in loans were converted at a 20% discount at a valuation of around 25 million. And 7.5 million were invested by Coatu at a valuation of 34 million post-money. They were already at nearly 44 million.
And now, just a little more than a year later, the company has raised its $41 million Series A, led by the Silicon Valley VC Felicis. This is an absolutely top-tier firm, still rather unknown here, founded by a former Google operator. I highly recommend taking a closer look at Felicis, one of the top VCs in my view, and Coatu joined the round again as well. According to our cap table, the company was valued at $250 million post-money, a quarter billion in just a few years. Really not bad.
Yes, definitely not bad. And the capital goes into four core areas. First, into the team. A very interesting detail Thomas Dubendorfer shared with me today. DeepJudge has hired Europe's top Google recruiter. His name is Brandon Cohen, and he made more than 1,000 tech hires for Google. He's expected to help the team scale from the current 50 employees to more than 100 second. The money goes into product and R&D, agentic workflows, improved retrieval layers, deep integration into law firm infrastructure.
I was also told that global go-to-market is front and center now. The US is going to be scaled aggressively. They want to push partner networks, especially the ones tied to Thomson Reuters. And then delivery and security are huge areas. More engineering, more customer success, more security, because large law firms have extremely high compliance requirements. This is the classic transition from having the best product in the market to building a global platform. It's not easy, and that's exactly why this round is big enough to make real moves.
Yes, they're now entering full scale-up mode, and they can also benefit massively from Harvey, the hyper-funded US legal AI startup. Harvey raised hundreds of millions and has created huge awareness for AI in legal tech. And once people look into the space, they search for real products, and DeepJudge ranks very high in those recommendations, so they can carve out pieces of the market. Harvey is helping educate. This is no longer an experiment. DeepJudge now has a real global agenda.
You also have to compare them to the competition. It is noticeable that some competitors have raised far more capital. I can't say this with certainty, but some likely raised substantially more than DeepJudge. The question is, can they become the category leader in this specific segment? You can certainly say they have very strong technology, they are achieving real adoption, and now they have top-tier investors. So if they execute the US expansion properly, we could see a European legal AI champion emerge.
Great, let's move to the last transaction of the month. We're already 40 minutes in, and now it's getting cold. Corintis is now known to basically everyone in the European semiconductor market, an EPFL spin-off bringing microfluidic cooling directly into the chip.
Right.
Let's start right at the beginning. Where does the team come from?
Corintis is a classic EPFL success story from the fields of microsystems engineering, thermodynamics, and fluidics. The team comes straight out of the labs where IBM and EPFL built the famous Aquasar project years ago, the world's first data center with direct microfluidic cooling.
That sounds simple enough, but Corintis goes even further. They want to move cooling into the packaging itself and into the chip stack. Not just onto the rack or the backside of a data center system. That's extremely deep technical know-how, and it's not something you can just copy.
Yes, it all sounds very academic, but I was told before the episode that the team is not made up solely of researchers. They brought in people early from packaging, ecosystem engineering, ASIC engineering, and cloud terminal design. That sets them apart from typical university spin-offs that often stay stuck in the lab. Let's talk about the product. What exactly does Corintis do, and why is it so different from traditional cooling methods?
In short, Corintis brings cooling exactly to where the heat is generated, inside the chip. They do this through tiny microchannels inside the silicon substrate, or more precisely, the interposer, where a fluid with extremely high thermal conductivity flows. According to Corintis, this allows 5 to 10 times higher power densities compared to today's air or rack-based cooling systems.
Right, and that solves one of the biggest problems in the AI boom. GPUs are no longer compute limited. They are thermal limited. The bottleneck is not compute, it's temperature.
Exactly. With chips like the H100 or MI300 from NVIDIA and AMD, the limiting factor in the next generation is thermal capacity. Not compute capacity. The generated heat must be removed far more efficiently, and everyone is searching for new technologies. Corintis differs fundamentally from the existing approaches because they operate at chip level, not rack level. They attack the problem exactly where it originates, and they're compatible with existing foundry processes. That's crucial. Corintis does not require a new production process at major fabs like TSMC that makes integration far easier. And a third point, water usage. They don't use water. It's a closed fluid system. Corintis speaks of massive energy savings, more than 30% of cooling costs. And if I recall correctly from a recent article on data centers, cooling accounts for 30 to 40% of annual operating costs.
Yes, and one investor told me that Corintis is not a cooling startup. Corintis is becoming a packaging enabler for the next generation of AI chips. That's a much bigger category. The market is therefore much broader, which naturally supports a higher valuation.
Interesting. Who are they talking to already?
They're addressing several markets at once. On the one hand, the hyperscalers, AWS, Azure, Google, Meta, then the chip manufacturers, NVIDIA, AMD, Intel, Graphcore, then the foundries, TSMC, Samsung, and finally, labs and supercomputing centers like ETH Zurich. They don't publicly disclose traction and keep things very discreet. We cannot name their customers explicitly, but they have several paid pilots with major cloud players, exactly where the bottleneck is biggest. Let's talk about funding. The company was founded in February 2022 and immediately attracted Blue Yard Capital and Founderful. They invested $3.9 million, though it's unclear if that includes non-dilutive grants. If not, the valuation would already have been close to $10 million pre-money.
A strong start, and the company was then supported by the ESA BIC program, and now they've announced their $24 million Series A. The round includes Blue Yard Capital leading again, with Founderful, Aqua Ventures, Celsius Industries, and XTX Ventures. And worth noting, at the end of last year, Intel's CEO joined the Corintis board. What's not publicly known is whether Intel Capital invested. If not, placing the CEO on the board is a good way to front-run an acquisition later.
Yes, a bit of a conflict of interest, but only a small one.
Intel had its own headaches recently, but things are looking better, at least judging by the stock. What risks do you see for Corintis?
Well, foundry integration is no walk in the park. You need qualification standards, 100% reliability, and full compatibility. Otherwise, integration takes much longer. I see supply chain risks. Can you scale this, or is it a collection of one-off special projects? sales cycles are very long as well. Cloud and foundries used to have 50-month evaluation cycles. Recently, that's dropped to 18 to 22 months on average. But still, 18 to 22 months is an eternity.
Yes, and it has to be qualified, then produced, then built into systems before royalties come in. Another risk is two-phase liquid cooling, which operates at a different level. If another technology overtakes them before they hit the market, that could be difficult. And in Switzerland, we have companies like Synsense or Synthetta that are claiming much higher efficiency chips, reducing heat generation in the first place. Then cooling becomes less critical. In summary, bringing chip-level technologies to market and scaling them is the hardest thing in semiconductors. This is the Champions League, but it's also the most valuable arena. So what happens next for Corintis?
The next steps are clear. They need to lock in foundry partnerships, industrialize packaging processes, integrate into AI server designs, start first series production, and hire a significant number of engineers.
Of course, if any of our listeners know engineers, connect them with Corintis. We were critical about the risks, but the timing for Corintis couldn't be better. From 2026 to 2029, the next generation of AI megachips will arrive, Blackwell, Rubin, MI400, and all of them face the same thermal bottlenecks.
Guy, who sold all his Nvidia shares this week?
SoftBank, and it dragged the stock down a bit.
Yes, a fascinating move. Everyone wondered what he would do with all that money, or why the exits came now. We'll have to wait and see.
Maybe he'll buy Corintis?
Exactly. If Corintis can capture even 1 to 2% of the high-end AI chip market, we're talking hundreds of millions in revenue in one of the most valuable markets in the world.
Yes, Corintis could genuinely become Europe's next deep tech heavyweight, yet another one coming out of Switzerland.
Yes, Corintis addresses one of the most fundamental problems of the AI era, heat. And that gives it enormous potential.
Who controls heat controls compute, and with that, the next phase of the AI boom. Calling them the next Nvidia might be bold, but who knows?
Who knows? All right, that's it for today's episode of Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. If you want to support our show, subscribe to our newsletter and share it within your network. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a regular episode of Burn Rate. Have a great weekend, take care, and bye-bye.